Production of Pipe Dreams is made possible in part by funding provided by Mr. and Mrs. Wesley C. Dudley, by a grant from the Mayhead Foundation, and by the support of listeners to stations in the Public Radio International Network.
From Minnesota Public Radio.
It all started out as just a simple idea. Put together an album of interesting things from our Pipe Dreams performance archive, stuff which we'd recorded over the years that deserved to be heard, that hadn't been recorded before, and that had received its first broadcast exposure on this program. And so we went ahead and did that simple thing. The result was the Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc. Unusual music for the King of Instruments. This that you're hearing in the background is but one example of it. A lot of hard work went into realizing that first simple idea, though, and we were so pleased with the results that we decided to have a party and celebrate. The party took place at House of Hope Presbyterian Church on Summit Avenue in St. Paul, which is, for me, always an exciting and congenial space for organ music because of the instruments there. And so, rather than just a reception with fruit juice and cake, we thought we'd have performances. Among the special guests were several of my Minnesota musician friends whose talents are featured on the Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc. And, well, I mean, after all, I was going to play Master of Ceremonies, and someone started to twist my arm. And though it's very difficult to play with a twisted arm, and I have difficulty playing under any circumstance, I do love to sit at a keyboard now and then, and so I exercised what they call host's prerogative, and the results of that will be audible in just a moment. Everything turned out fine, everyone had a great time, and I thought I'd let you share it with us today. You're about to hear what it would be like if I took this Pipe Dreams program out of the production studio and into the community. Who knows, this might be another simple idea on the verge. Sharing the spotlight with me are Melanie Ninneman and Edward Berryman, Leonard Danick and Michael Ferguson, and Monty Mason with his choirs. Something a little different for you. I'm Michael Barone. And today, you're tuned to Pipe Dreams Live. It's Pipe Dreams live today, a recital from House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul. That prelude, fugue, and chaconne by Buxtehude was performed by, well, I have to confess, it was me being courageous, hidden away in the organ loft. One of the impossibilities about being an organist is that you usually end up being where people can't see you. And I am exactly where you can't see me, right? Welcome. We're here to celebrate, to enjoy the artistry of a variety of Twin Cities musicians who, by choice as well as chance, find themselves on our new first Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc. Our first real player is a composer-organist, Leonard Danek. I suppose you could say that he follows directly in the tradition of Johann Sebastian Bach insofar as he plays what he writes and writes what he plays, which I find to be even more amazing. It's hard enough to get the proper notes to go down at the proper time, Bach's magic formula for good organ playing, and then the instrument plays itself, but to have created the notes beforehand that one wants to put down in the proper time is also something of a miracle. Leonard gave a recital some seasons back, which was devoted entirely to his own compositions. We recorded and broadcast that as part of the Pipe Dreams cycle, and I invited him to play some of those pieces for us tonight, a group of three little hymn preludes, melodies of which should be familiar to you, a brief, calm meditation called Flowers, which does appear on our CD, and then the last movement out of three meditations on texts from St. John, and this gives a good roundabout expression of what Leonard Danek does as a composer. It will show off many colors of the Fisk organ. And so now for the official beginning, the festival prelude, here is Leonard Danek.
Thank you.
Minnesota composer Leonard Danik playing his own festival prelude on our Pipe Dreams Live program today, Feisty Music. Next, some short pieces on familiar hymns, O Come Emmanuel, Lead On, O King Eternal, and In Dulce Jubilo. Leonard Danik on the Fisk organ at House of Hope Presbyterian Church. Those were three wry and colorful hymn preludes by Leonard Danek. Now he plays a very lovely little thing called Flowers, which is part of our Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc. That was Flowers by Leonard Danek, played by himself. And to wrap up his part of our concerts today, Leonard will perform the finale from Three Meditations on the Gospels of St. John. This music inspired by the passage, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." In the beginning was the Word, and those words inspired our composer Leonard Danek to write that music which he has just played. It's the last of three meditations on passages from the Gospels of St. John. Music of Leonard Danek in concert at House of Hope Presbyterian Church. Vivid, thoughtful, and inspired pieces that we've heard today. And in that last meditation, a big pedal solo towards the end. Keep the feet tapping. I'm Michael Barone with friends in a concert which we put on not so long ago. More to come. It's Pipe Dreams Live on this edition of Pipe Dreams. St. Paul's House of Hope Presbyterian Church is a remarkable place, blessed with instruments, only two of which are heard today. Our next soloist, however, will play both of them. Dr. Edward Berryman, longtime director of music at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Minneapolis, and master of the vintage Aeolian Skinner concert organ at the University of Minnesota's Northrop Auditorium, on which he appears in our Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc, will be featured in two selections now. And let's get Edward up to the microphone. Organist's feet, by nature, want to dance, don't they?
Yes, of course. They had better. Yes, that's the reason I put these pieces together, because I think it can be thought that they suggest the dance. Now, Franck suggests French ballet. My own piece is the first of a trio of pieces, supposed to be the second and third are not yet written. But here goes with the first. I spent more time learning this than I have a lot of pieces. Once you've written a piece, you no longer regard it as your own. You've got to do all the things to play it that you do with everybody else's pieces. One time, the great pianist Rudolf Gantz, who was for many years head of the Chicago Musical College, came from Switzerland originally, he was playing one of his own compositions in public, and he forgot right in the middle of it. So he got up to the audience and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I will play you something I know," and sat down and played Chopin.
The piece by Franck, the Andantino in G minor. Franck, probably the most famous 19th century composer for the organ, and this probably his most infamous or non-famous of works, but it's a little sweetheart. charming little piece by César Franck, Andantino in G minor, with Edward Berryman playing the 1878 Märklin organ, built in France, but now in the chancel at House of Hope Church in St. Paul, Minnesota. And through the miracle of tape editing, Ed's going to scoot from the chancel up to the organ loft in the rear of House of Hope Church to play a piece of his own composition. It's called Polychrome No. 1, a sort of takeoff on Spanish dance rhythms, and as the title hints, it's full of color. This time, we hear the 97-rank Fisk pipe organ. Thank you. That was Polychrome No. 1, first of three planned movements in a set by Dr. Edward Berryman, Minnesota musician, who performed for us on Pipe Dreams Live today from St. Paul, playing both the front and back organs at House of Hope Presbyterian. Though separately, however, in this next piece, you're going to hear that pair of organs played together. Louis Vierne, who was the organist at Notre Dame Cathedral for almost the first four decades of this century, creator of some grand extravagance, sometimes haunted, sometimes overwhelmingly powerful, sometimes achingly beautiful music, wrote originally for just this sort of setup, big organ at the back of the church, small organ at the front with the choir. Now, being as I am somewhat perverse, we're going to let the choir sit it out, mostly because they haven't learned this piece and I didn't expect them to. It requires a choir probably at least three times as large as this one. And I first learned of this work not as the Kyrie from the Solemn Mass by Vierne, but as a Maestoso by Vierne, and it was in an arrangement by Alexander Schreiner, organist at the Mormon Tabernacle, a famous and generous man, who recorded the piece back in the late 1950s, recording which was one of the first that I collected, the first of many in my Pipe Dreams storehouse at home. He did it up for just one big organ, and at the Mormon Tabernacle, one big organ surely is enough. We decided that we would use both instruments here. The front organ plays the accompaniment part which Vierne wrote originally and also plays the part that the choir would sing if the choir were singing. And the organ in the back does, well, you will hear. Melanie Ninneman has the big part playing the Fisk organ. I perform the small stuff on the Merklan up front. Here's music of Louis Vierne. was the Maestoso, or the Kyrie, from a mass for two organs and choir, originally music of Louis Vierne, which we present here in a version for just two organs without the choir. Melanie Ninneman performed with me at House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul. That is right, I was playing, and I admit to it, but Melanie had the big part on the Fisk organ. Thank you, Gypsy. What fun we had. It's Pipe Dreams Live today with yours truly and friends out in the public eye and ear, having a grand time. Hope you are too, as we share it with you. I'm Michael Barone with more to come on this edition of Pipe Dreams. We're going to give the big organ a rest now and enjoy performances by the Gregorian Singers, a men's choir, and the Academy of St. Cecilia, a women's chorus, both of them performing under the direction of Monty Mason. The Gregorian Singers have been a project of Monty Mason for about two decades now. They create Compline worship environments at St. Mark's Cathedral in Minneapolis on a regular basis. Monty and I go back to almost my first year in Minnesota. He was a student at McAllister College, an impish guy even then, maybe more so then than now, I'm not so sure. He and his colleagues, his collegial colleagues, put on events that they termed nonserts, and the one that I remember participating in was a sequential performance that lasted many hours of a piece called Vexations.
Well, that was 24 hours.
24 hours? Gosh, it seemed like just a day. A little piano piece by Eric Satie that I think in performance one time through lasts only about 85 seconds or so. And you play it again and again and again and again. And you get the idea. Now the choirs are joined by organist Melanie Ninneman in accompaniment on the Mehrklang organ. We hear the Magnificat by Brian Kelly. Magnificat by Brian Kelly with the Gregorian Singers and the Academy of St. Cecilia. Choirs conducted by Monty Mason with Melanie Ninneman accompanying. Monty's very haunting setting of Psalm 129 appears on our Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc.
So, I think we're up to Bach. Are we up to Bach? No, we're up to Handel. Handel is a prelude to Bach. Now, no organ concert is any good without a piece by Bach. And of all the works that could have been on this program tonight, the only one that really was appropriate, since after all we are celebrating the release of a Pipe Dreams compact disc, would be the Bach piece that is on that record. Now, the album is entitled Pipe Dreams Premieres, and it does include quite a number of works which are receiving their first recording, and in many instances, recordings of their first performance or their first publicly available performance. You would think that by this point, all of Bach's works have been discovered, and certainly all of the works of Bach have been composed, but not quite. Bach, in creating his magnum opus exploration of the potentials of fugal counterpoint, left one little item undone. It was the 14th contrapuntus. It was a work, well, I'm going to let Michael Ferguson tell us a little bit about it, because he did the unthinkable. He took an incomplete piece by Bach and had the gall to finish it. Where did you get the courage to do such a thing, Michael?
I don't know if courage is quite the thing that enters into it. It's a little bit like, who was it who was asked, why did you climb Mount Everest? Because it was there. It seemed to beckon with some rather tantalizing puzzles. Bach was one for puzzles, and he wrote puzzle canons, where he would write out one line and leave a clue in the title for how to find the following parts. I think it's possible this last fugue from the Art of Fugue is something of a puzzle fugue. It is the last fugue in a series of 14. Bach liked the number 14. He was very interested in it. He was pursuing ideas that relate to ancient Jewish mysticism known as Kabbalah, and where numbers and letters relate to each other. His name is spelt out in numbers that equal 14. And J.S. Bach equals 41. And these are, of course, an inversion one of the other. And in his music, he would put in different elements that would relate to these numbers, playing games with them.
This final contrapuntus is the culmination of a sequence of evolutions of a rather simple theme. The theme of the main piece, the very first theme that one hears at the very beginning of Art of Fugue, is he will take that and turn it upside down in one of the works. And he'll sort of jiggle it rhythmically and do other snazzy things with it. He then creates new subjects for new counterpoints and weaves that original theme in with them. And in this 14th contrapuntus, there are a total of how many subjects?
There are four subjects, and the second has 41 notes, referring to the numbers of the name J.S. Bach. That theme goes like this. The third theme goes with the number 14, where he spells it out on the keyboard, B in German nomenclature, B flat, A, C, B natural for H.
Now, this final contrapuntus starts out with which theme?
With a different theme, yet. It goes like this. which even though it doesn't have the numbers 14 or 41 attached, can be played the same forwards or backwards, and having seven notes, I guess that counts for 14.
This Bach, he was a cagey fellow. This Michael Ferguson also was a cagey fellow. Bach completed how many measures before he decided just to let things go, and at what point does he leave things go?
He got as far as measure 239, where he had put in some of the notes that you need, but not all. It's perfectly clear you need to fill it in a bit. And 239, if you add the digits, seems to come out to 14 also. And these numbers just don't stop happening. I found when I was writing my ending that that number was bothering me a bit, and it occurred to me finally that it was the 239th year since Bach had died that I was writing this conclusion in.
Strange, strange are the forces of fate.
The numbers in the piece are also, one can read in scholarly works about Bach's numerology, and it gets a little, extreme and kind of far-fetched, but you can demonstrate that 14 and 41, he sure liked those two. And the last fugue, which I've written the ending for, is a four-in-one fugue, a quadruple fugue, and the series of 14 fugues begins with four simple fugues. So we have one, four, and at the end, four-in-one. Other things that seem to happen when Bach didn't live long enough to see the first edition through, and his sons, by way of compensation to the music-loving public, included a chorale that he had rearranged towards the end of his life, and it turns out that of its four phrases, the first phrase contains exactly 14 notes, and the sum total of all the notes in the melody is 41. So he was quite obsessed with this. What I find the most curious, I guess I take the attitude of a folklorist towards this. I'm interested in what can be observed and what people say about it. It's of interest, though, to note that the numbers don't stop with Bach's input. It seems that they keep following around. James Frazier, who performed this for the first time in recital, happened to do so at the Cathedral of St. Paul, right down the street here, whose address is 239 Selby. And as if that wasn't just, enough of a coincidence, he played it on the upstairs organ in the gallery, which organ happens to contain 41 ranks. So who knows? The numbers just keep coming.
We can talk about Art of Fugue and this particular work until the cows come home, although actually the cows may have come home already. However, beyond all of the things that one can say about it, it is spectacularly energized, superbly intellectual and emotional music, and I think you will have a great deal of trouble knowing when Bach stops and when Michael Ferguson picks up. Now, as just a little prelude to the Bach, I thought I would play another fugue in D by Bach's exact contemporary, the much more famous during his lifetime, George Friedrich Handel, who left us very few works for solo organ, but did write a couple of little fugues. And you'll just see, famous though Handel was, what a gap there is between what he felt was appropriate for the organ and what Bach, at his most creative, could create for this instrument.
Thank you.
fugue voluntary in D attributed to Handel, with yours truly playing, providing a contrast to this next big fugue in D minor from Bach's Heart of the Fugue. Minnesota musician Michael Ferguson has completed it, and he will perform it for us now. Remember, from bar 239 forward, it's not Bach any longer. See if you can hear the shift.
Thank you.
absolutely spectacular in every way. The 14th contrapuntus from Bach's Art of Fugue, left incomplete at bar 239 by Bach, finished with great conviction and even a bit of audacity with the addition of many pages from Minnesota composer Michael Ferguson, who performed both Bach and his own addition to Bach here in concert at House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. And thank you, Johann Sebastian, for smiling down from wherever you are, or maybe you're spinning 41 times in your grave. Thank you all for coming. By all means, take note of the advertisement for the Pipe Dreams compact disc on the back of your program, and if you feel so moved, that piece played on that organ is track number 2. And though you can't wear out a compact disc by playing it over and over and over again, that certainly is an experience that I enjoy reliving. The Pipe Dreams program is, as I'm fond of saying, something of an amazement to me. I'm happy that so many people find it listenable and take so much pleasure out of the music for the King of Instruments, pleasure which certainly I am happy to share and encourage. Special note to Helen Ettinger, if you will stand, please, and Dorothy Hanford. Pipe Dreams is not just me. There are folk who work behind the scenes to make it happen. And frankly, if it weren't for Helen's diligent exercises over the past year, the Pipe Dreams compact disc wouldn't exist and we wouldn't be here tonight. So thank you both. Thank you all. And keep listening.
And thanks, too, to behind-the-scenes workers Krista Fieber, John Pearson, and Tony Ball, part of the Pipe Dreams team. Pipe Dreams Live was recorded by audio engineer Michael Osborne for us at House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul on the 30th of June, 1993. I'd like to thank House of Hope's organist, Nancy Lancaster, for facilitating a most gracious hospitality. Thanks, too, to our musicians participating today, Leonard Danik, Monty Mason, and his singers, Melanie Ninneman, Edward Berriman, and Michael Ferguson. Most of them, and quite a number of others, appear on our Pipe Dreams Premieres compact disc, which this program was an out-in-the-open celebration. If you'd like information on the compact disc, if you'd like information about our programs, write for our quarterly brochure, write to Pipe Dreams, 45 East 7th Street, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55101. When you do write, obviously your comments are welcome. Please also send a stamped self-addressed envelope for the return mail and do tell us to which station you are listening. Our address, once again, is Pipe Dreams, 45 East 7th Street, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55101. Pipe Dreams, the radio program, is produced with financial assistance from Mr. and Mrs. Wesley C. Dudley, with a grant from the Mayhad Foundation of Bayport, Minnesota, and with the support of listeners such as yourself to stations affiliated with PRI, Public Radio International. Do your part. Tell a friend. And join us here for good sounds whenever you can. Until next time, for Pipe Dreams, live or not, I'm Michael Barone. Thank you for listening. Pipe Dreams is a production of Minnesota Public Radio.
PRI, Public Radio International.